Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. You can tell by the lack of Australian accent. This is Jason Hendricks hosting today and joined by co-host Dara Tarkowski, managing partner of Actuate Law in Chicago. An exciting show today. Lots of interesting stuff. We're going to start, Dara and I, talking about the CFPB's no action letter around the use of alternative data and what that means for innovators. Then we've got some exclusive announcements, and we're going to have award-winning author and prominent blogger Brian Solis on to talk about his new book, and very excited special announcement today. Provoke.fm is adding Finovate as a prominent podcaster. We're going to have Greg Palmer both to talk about Finovate, where it's headed, and also an exclusive, for the first time, his very first Finovate podcast with Jim Breeny, the founder of Finovate. Now, let's get to some conference announcements. So speaking of Finovate, it is coming up in New York, September 23rd and 25th to the 25th. Don't miss your chance to join 1,500 financial and banking executives, venture capitalists, innovators, entrepreneurs, industry analysts, and more in New York City as they talk about where the financial industry is headed. They'll be coming from all across the globe to hear from industry leaders, see the latest fintech innovations, and network with the innovators and executives behind the most exciting tech in finance. Use code FKV2348. BDW for 20% off. Greg, we're going to have to talk about creating shorter codes in the second half of this. So again, Foxtrot, Kilo, Victor, 2348, Bravo, Delta, Whiskey for 20% off. And we will put that out in social media as well. Now, if you're looking for ways to create value and unlock actually the potential within your organization, JP and I are hosting a session at the BAI Innovation Summit October 8th through 10th in Boston. Now, innovation isn't just about chasing shiny objects. It's really about creating value. So please join us there. You can go to bai.org and save $300 if you use the code S19. That's Sierra 19er. Now, next we have Solstice Forward 19 kicking off in Chicago October 16th. Forward is a full-day interactive summit with revealing explorations of bold and innovative ideas and immersive emerging tech experience. What I love is it is a full suite of both innovators within financial services and other digital leaders. So don't forget to sign up if you go to Solstice/ForwardFWD19. And last, if you're going to be at Money 2020, we host a group, include Dara is one of our primary sponsors, a small group of us get together, DM us or hit us up at BreakingBanks1, and we'll get you an invite to that party. So speaking of Dara, she's joining us from Finovista in Mexico City. And interesting stat, Mexico and Latin America as a whole has seen a massive leap in financial technology startups. In fact, they're showing that the space has grown by close to 70% from 2017-18 to where it is today. Now, Dara, we always love a good excuse to have you on the show. And so two good reasons, not only the CFPB announcement, but what are you seeing at Finovista that's standing out?
Well, hi, and thank you so much for having me back. I am here in Mexico City right now. Past 2 days, the Fino Summit hosted by Finovista has been focused exclusively on fintech. I think today is their InsurTech Day. But you're absolutely right. That's a statistic that they highlighted pretty prominently over the past 2 days. And I think really what conference was focused on and really highlighted was the showcase of results of an environment that has really encouraged a productive dialogue and focused partnership between incumbents, startups, and most importantly, a friendly regulatory environment.
Well, you know, the friendly regulatory environment, I'm curious, how is, you know, both Mexico and broadly within Latin America, are they taking a stance that's more similar to what we're seeing coming out of the UK and out of places like Singapore? What is their stance looking like?
So last year in 2018, Mexico actually passed a fintech law, the whole purpose of which was to create that regulatory framework applicable to persons who either through IT platforms, whether you were a fintech institution or an established Mexican financial entity, very focused on crowdfunding, crypto, and e-money payments. The law was implemented last year, and I think this year, we're now actually seeing a lot of the fruit of the thought that went into that legislation.
Interesting. So speaking of interesting regulatory stances, more news out of the CFPB for those outside of the U.S. That's the U.S.'s Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that came up after the 2008 crisis as part of the reckoning on how do we better serve consumer protection. Now, they were clarifying their previous position on no action letters. What did we learn this week, Dara?
So 2 days ago, CFPB issued three new policies. One was kind of a tweak to their no action letter policy that was first established in 2016. We saw a trial disclosure program policy and then a compliance assistance sandbox policy. The no action letter policy is not new per se. The announcement that came out 2 days ago was really more about kind of clarifying process and how applications for no action letters would be submitted. To me, what was more interesting on the no action letter front was an announcement made earlier in October with an update on a no action letter that they issued to Upstart Networking, which was about alternative credit data information for underwriting purposes. But the three new announcements yesterday are lots and lots of activity, and I would suspect that we're going to see some lawmaking activity through our court system because there's definitely a healthy number of consumer advocacy groups and state AGs who are not fans of the announcements that were made in the past day or so.
Yeah, it's interesting because the state AGs seem to be split almost half and half, with half siding with some of these consumer advocacy groups around the idea that, you know, this is bad and it's actually giving people a carte blanche. And it's something you and I debate, you know, offline quite a bit. And I love to hear your perspective on, you know, what is the place of this sandbox and how does it fit in around responsible innovation?
Well, I think the idea is that in order to, you know, disrupt and create change and do it safely and to innovate, create new products, open credit to individuals who've not traditionally been given access to credit, there needs to be a little bit of risk-taking and study done. And in order for institutions to be able to do it and do it safely and be free from, you know, regulatory enforcement or civil litigation, they want to raise their hands and say, hey, we want to think about different ways to do things. Can you please watch us do this? And we'll keep you informed the entire time. And in exchange, could you please not sue us or fine us?
Yes.
I think that's a good thing. You know, I think it is much better than the alternative where companies may come up with products, try to find loopholes in licensing, and try to, you know, operate along the edges. I think this is a more responsible way to go about innovating. And, you know, I understand that lots of consumer groups really question the need because in their view, all of the products that are, you know, I think on the table, they think have a place in the existing regulatory framework, and industry thinks otherwise, right?
Yeah.
It's just like a fundamental disagreement there.
Well, and, you know, there are certainly pockets within industry that look to skirt the consumer protection. And there are those who actually want to create products that promote inclusivity, better serve underserved markets, create greater efficiency in the marketplace. But their incentive, it's hard when, you know, there's this real conflict between clarity, which the regulation doesn't always solve, in the ambiguity there in terms of making the investment. And unfortunately, when that ambiguity exists, you know, building on something you said, oftentimes it's either those who are willing to skirt it and take the risk, which I think is the wrong approach, versus what you just said, that if they're invited into the dialogue, that might be the better way to promote responsible innovation. Because I think one thing is the majority, whether you're an incumbent or you're an innovator, we're not looking to get a carte blanche away from, hey, we can actually go do these things that are really bad, especially for consumers.
Yeah, I mean, when the CFPB's press release 2 days ago, direct quote from the press release and from the policy itself essentially says that the proposed sandbox policy is designed to be relief from regulatory uncertainty, not from regulatory obligation. So the idea isn't that you get a free pass to break the law. It's about, we're going to guide you through the process so that you don't, and we are going to gather data and learn whether or not your product idea is a good idea, because, by the way, maybe it's not. And if it's not, I don't think anyone would have wanted to spend, you know, millions in research, in development, and then in compliance for a product that just isn't working, and then you find out isn't actually doing the thing that you wanted it to do in the first place.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, for those interested in learning more without reading all 300 pages, Dara did a great summary on the FinTechs blog. That's FINTEX.org. And on the blog there, you'll find her recap of at least the portion of the 300 pages she read. And for me, you know, that was a great summary. So that, why don't we bring on our next guest? Brian is, you know, been on the show multiple times. He's the principal analyst and futurist at Altimeter, the digital analyst group at Profit. And he's a world-renowned keynote speaker, 7 times best-selling author. And last time we had him on the show, it was for his book, X, Where Business Meets Design, which explored the future of brand and customer engagement through experience design. Well, he has a new book out, so we're excited to actually get a preview, 2 great previews today. This one's called LifeScale, How to Live a More Creative, Productive, and Happy Life. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. And yeah. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Yeah. So I'm curious. This seems like a right-hand turn from some of the stuff you've written previously. What inspired you to write it?
Yeah, I mean, it's my 8th book, but it's my first personal book, and it was not a book that was on my horizon or my roadmap in any way, shape, or form. And what inspired me to write it was because I hit a wall. I've been studying all of this stuff, helping shape its direction, advising many of these startups and device manufacturers over the last couple decades, and only to find out that I was not immune to the powers of distraction. I was not immune to the addictive nature of a lot of the persuasive design that goes into these apps and services that we use every day. So the thing is that I didn't know I had a problem until I failed to write what would have been my 8th book. I couldn't even get past the proposal stage, and I had to just press pause on life and do some soul searching, because it was either fix the problem or whatever that problem was I didn't know at the time, or completely lose any market stature or ability to, you know, speak around at conferences, because books are a really, really, really big deal as a industry calling card.
Well, I'm curious, how did it manifest itself that you weren't able to get even past the proposal stage? Like, what were your symptoms?
If you look at they start off as incredibly common. And unless you're going to throw yourself into a deep circumstance, it's going to test every aspect of how you've been rewired over the last decade. You know, for the most part, you're not going to really know there's a problem. You're going to feel like something's off. So for example, you know, if one of the easiest, most common things that we all do and say these days is when someone asks you how you're doing, you say busy. Everybody's so busy now. Yep. And the fact is that now, instead of single tasking, we're constantly multitasking. If you look at anybody's browser, they probably have at least 20 or 30 tabs open.
I'm going to start counting right now, by the way, because like, I have multiple, you know, windows open so that I can have more tabs open.
Yeah, and then look at all of the you know, the files that we have on our desktop. You know, all of this stuff that's manifesting itself in and around our day-to-day activities and our work lives and our personal lives are carrying these cognitive loads. And then, you know, look at how you feel when you see somebody posting pictures online that you project the seemingly incredible life, or that you feel less about yourself because the way that you're seeing all of these other things. So you then try to manifest that sort of stature, and you post and you post and you post. And then, you know, it's just this constant, constant cycle where you're never, ever getting ahead, but it's the new normal. And so how did that manifest in my day-to-day and not being able to get past the proposal stage was that I was constantly doing a million things at once and not able to dive deep like I had been over the last decade, deep to get to those insights and those innovative ideas that were going to help create a solid foundation for a bestseller. And you know, at the time I chalked it up to just writer's block, but ultimately I just started looking at everything in my life and realizing that I was doing too much. I was constantly reaching for my phone. I was constantly open to distractions. And if I wasn't, then I was proactively doing it. So I'll just kind of pause there because I could go on for an hour on it.
So Brian, what exactly do you do to find balance, given that you are constantly reaching for your phone and you had kind of this revelation within yourself that, you know, it was too much and it was time to hit pause?
You know, it's not really about balance as much as it is intention, right? So it's not just about the device. It's also about everything in your life. What happens is how we live online affects how we live offline. So when I was looking at sort of the state of my relationships, whether that was my marriage or whether that was as a father, with my friends, everything had just sort of evolved to become much more superficial. And for the most part, it wasn't a big problem because in their lives, the same thing was happening too. Their relationships were becoming increasingly superficial, just sort of a function of multitasking and just constantly hopping apps and services and scrolling mindlessly. But what you do is you have to intentionally rewire your brain and your body, because what happened is over, you know, since the dawn of the iPhone and certain games and social networks, that we have been rewired through a very sophisticated and potent form of what's called persuasive design. And those design techniques sort of emulate, for example, what goes into slot machine design to get you to change your behavior so you're using it more, you're scrolling more. And every time you do that, what's happening is inside of your brain and your body, you're rewiring yourself for how you think, how you operate, how you act. It's accelerating everything that you, how you do. And really, at the end of the day, the answer to your question is slowly, and that's what the book is about, is the journey that I went on to rewire myself and then also to get better than where I was before, not just to get back to where I was before. It's essentially taking the same persuasive design techniques, but using them in a much more positive and productive and creative way.
Leave it to a designer to go and try and do the redesign and optimization as you think about your life. I love that. And I'm glad you're willing to share that for those of us who are not great about doing experience design and that level of intentionality. Now, I am curious, as you were looking holistically, not just about screen time, how did money and the concepts of money and the distractions of money, how did that start to play in as you were being much more intentional about designing your life?
You know, the thing about money is that when the tension is essentially a commodity that's traded in these platforms, right? And so the more of your attention they have, the more that they're able to monetize, the more of my attention that I have, the more I'm able to monetize my life. And I think I had to take control over who is in control of my financial freedom and my financial future. One of the things that I looked at it in this regard, like in anything, whether it's an investment in capital or it's an investment in resources, it is all about an opportunity cost, right? What's the cost of continuing life as it is, and what's the cost of not doing anything about it, and what's the cost of doing something about it, and then also exploring the net returns on all of this. And I opted for greater fulfillment and greater returns by intentionally living my life in a much more purposeful way. Now, look, the one thing I want to say is I don't want people to confuse that I'm anti-technology. I'm just simply anti-manipulation. I do use all of the same tech every single day. I just do so differently with a different sense of purpose. But to get there, it wasn't just rewiring my brain and body, it was also rewiring my mindset. You know, where am I and where do I really want to go? What does, if I have access to all of this information, all of this technology, what does happiness and success even look like if I can take control of it or if I can define it? And the life scale journey is really I think a wonderful and approachable, I think an inspiring, and it's also a very creative way to explore where you are and where you're going.
So Brian, what was the most surprising thing that you learned either about, you know, others' behaviors or your own in writing the book?
Oh, man. Okay, so I'll be super fast. Some of the most surprising things were the fact that essentially we are all addicts, that when you get something as simple as a like or any form of attention, there's upwards of 6 different chemicals that are swishing around in your brain and your body at that moment, and your body learns to become dependent on it, like any other substance, really. And so you crave it without even thinking about it. And that's
we love the love.
Yeah, we love the love. And what was surprising was the science behind all of that, and then ultimately what happens to you. So there's a reason why you're multitasking. There's a reason why you feel anxious. There's a reason why a lot of times you're even questioning your own self-esteem. A lot of this is sort of a function of how those chemicals rewire us. The other things, though, that were surprising were the effects of multitasking, that it affects your short-term and your long-term memory, that it actually thins out your prefrontal cortex, that you actually... every time you open yourself to distraction, you become more open to distractions. And then lastly, there's a long, 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 long list, and I talk about some of those things in the first couple of chapters. But lastly, the biggest surprise for me was just how deeply I was affected, and like anybody's affected. So I, at the beginning of the book, so I get your brain ready to be able to kind of go deeper and deeper and deeper, I use what's called attention hacks that I had to use on myself to be able to focus longer than a minute. And I used, it's a very common technique called the Pomodoro technique, where you use a timer to focus for single task for 25 minutes. Nothing. No phone, no multi-tabbing, no nothing. And the first few times I did it, I couldn't even get past 3 minutes. Subconsciously, I would reach for my phone even without a notification. And I just, to the extent of which I couldn't sit there and focus, was hugely awakening for me.
For those looking for a good technique, there's a free online open up in one of your many tabs, the tomato timer, that helps teach you the Pomodoro method. And I, like you, had a horrible time. And I actually started getting super frustrated. And it's funny, it's kind of meta, where I'm like frustrated at being frustrated that I can't actually pay attention. And now I'm so frustrated I can't pay attention anymore. But it was a helpful way to start to break that down. So I'm curious, going back to the money and the fulfillment piece of this, and we think about so much of behavioral economics is really being thrust and used by fintechs and by financial institutions. Where do you think people's interaction with technology, and do the big banks and the tech providers have a moral obligation as they're approaching this, as they're creating these addictive behaviors?
That's a really great question. I think... in fact, maybe you can invite me back in the future and we can talk about sort of one of the things that I learned in my research, and this is on the digital anthropology side of my work, which is ultimately ironic how I succumbed to all of this stuff, because I knew and I've studied what was happening in the first place. One of the things that I had learned along the way was how our constant and pervasive connectivity affects our idea of lifestyle. And lifestyle, of course, one of the pillars of that is money. And then when you look at our evolving relationship with money, and then also what it is that we value, and then you compare that to how banks and traditional financial institutions are thinking about the future, how they're thinking about innovation, you can really start to visualize an incredible gap between roadmaps and then behavioral economics. And this is where I think the conversation gets super interesting, right? LifeScale helps you fix your life and helps you get where you need to go. The research behind that, and also previous research that I have done, has shown me that banks and financial institutions do not get it. And then that is scary. And this is why you see so much fintech innovation, because essentially what you have are entrepreneurs who are really trying to just solve for themselves and people like them, much like the LifeScale journey. There was no solution out there, so I had to go create one. Any banks or financial, you know, legacy financial professionals listening, you know, there's a lot of human-centered work that you have to do. And the way that the human evolution is happening is way outside of how you're thinking about it every single day.
Well, important point there is I think bankers need to also recognize the majority of the world that uses their products do not think like bankers. Right, the bankers are a special breed, and so they might, you know, be able to do accrual accounting and don't have a problem with spending too much on credit cards. And they do the calculations on what is the lifetime cost of, you know, taking out this loan. And I think there's one bank that actually did a phenomenal job with this. Are you familiar with the Merrill Edge Picture Retirement application?
Yes. That's one that that a lot of people applaud.
Yeah, well, I mean, for those who haven't seen it, one of the ahas for Merrill was they understood that people can't actually put themselves in their future place, so they very quickly begin to dismiss actions today that can have long-term implications, but the application ages you, and you can see yourself at various points in your life, and it really started to modify some behaviors. Brian, do you have any others like that where you have good examples of behavioral modification that actually was good for the customer and good for the institution?
Well, I mean, way back in the day, Mint was sort of the trailblazer for that. But another one that I'm actually, full disclosure, my dear friend is the CMO there that I'm going to partner with as a matter of sort of bringing their application to the greater masses, and especially those who don't think about, for example, wealth management the way that bankers do or traditional wealth management customers do, is a company called Personal Capital that's using content and engagement, personal engagement first, and then sort of backing you into the conversation around what it means to think about your finances and your future.
Yeah, we'll have to pick that up in the second half as well, because I believe, you know, if I'm not mistaken, they are a Finovate alumni, so maybe Greg will be able to comment on there as well. You know, Betterment does a pretty good job in that same, not as much on content, but actually helping you see where, you know, small changes are going to have bigger impacts as it kind of plays it out for you, you know, over the lifetime there. You know, before we run out of time, where can people find the book?
Oh, yeah, thanks for asking. It's on Amazon, probably at your local bookstore if you want to support your local businesses. The website for the book is lifescaling.me. There's more information there too in terms of workbooks and also the programs for coaches and teachers. And then my site is briansolis.com, and I study all kinds of stuff there, so look forward to connecting with you. And if you read the book, let me know.
Well, actually, so upcoming vacation, I have actually already taken the step to do that. My wife checked it out, and she's like, "You're taking a workbook with you on vacation?" I'm like, "It's really important, honey. It's about being more creative and happier." So after the break, we're going to come back and, you know, first talk with Greg Palmer about Finovate, the podcast, get an inside look on what's going on with the future of Finovate, and then you're hearing it here first, the very first of the Finovate podcast with Jim Breeny, who was the founder of Finovate, as interviewed by Greg. And I'm super curious if Jim ran out of time and got the gong at the end of it. You're going to have to listen to the end in order to hear that. But now, time for a break.
Hey, Dal here at MX. With all the disruption in the financial industry, what are you doing to stay ahead? Join the brightest minds at Digital Banking Week as they discuss must-watch topics from open banking and AI-driven tech to the strategic use of data. Not only will you get access to the top minds in the industry, there will be dozens of content downloads to help you lead your organization as you create the future of banking. Register now at digitalbankingweek.com or set a reminder for later. Again, that's digitalbankingweek.com. See you there.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second half. And, you know, if we could have two more different segments, this would probably be the show. Brian Solis in the first half talking about how do you feed into this level of intentionality and almost a slowness. And then Finovate, which got its roots in how do we do rapid fire exposure to a lot of ideas. It's like drinking from the fire hose of fintech. But excited today to have Greg Palmer, Vice President of Finovate, the leading fintech innovation show, where he is the man behind the mic. And I've got to ask, are you the one who actually gets to hit the gong button too if they go over the 7 minutes? Because that feels like, you know, a godlike power to be able to gong people.
You know, first off, pleasure to be here. And I'll say I actually can't be trusted with a mic with the gong. I have not been able to resist the temptation to abuse it. So I have to give it over to our AV team, who I think really relishes it, by the way. They never get the opportunity to do that kind of thing to any of the shows that they put on. So for them to be able to actually hit that bell, I think there's a strong amount of satisfaction for them. And so we outsource it, to be honest. But I have played with it. I did actually gong Brett on stage at Finovate Fall last year, which I have to say was deeply satisfying.
Deeply satisfying. You could actually probably auction off gong rights. And, you know, I would pay, you know, top dollar to gong someone, you know, especially when they're going off the rails with the world's worst pitch, you know, like if you could just gong them or the audience could kind of vote on the gong, that'd be pretty awesome too.
Yeah. Make it like X Factor, right? Where all of a sudden the buzzer goes off and, oh, that's strike one.
Exactly. So how has Finovate evolved over the years? You know, I remember, you know, back in the day before there were a lot of sponsors sitting in long rows of tables, not a fancy big ballroom, but, you know, it like literally was the mints on the table and like the water with ice in it and the pitchers. And that was, you know, all of it. And the reception at the end, I don't even think was more than a cash bar. So other than it becoming, you know, one of the biggest shows out there, how has the format evolved?
Well, I think the format has evolved along the same lines as the way the fintech industry has evolved, right? It's kind of matured. It's grown. It's now less of this sort of gritty startup kind of small level feel. And it's grown now into something that's more prominent, more polished. And at Finovate, we've tried to keep our show really top of mind. We want to stick to our roots. Obviously, it's grounded in cutting edge technology and live demos and that fast paced format. And we want to stay true to that while at the same time recognizing that it is a more mature space now. And there is more than just the technologies up on stage that we want to talk about. So we've looked at adding, you know, some different types of content, getting some other speakers involved, hearing from industry analysts and experts, and giving some of those other folks a chance to get up there on stage, still trying to keep it tight, trying to keep it very short form. But when we're able to do that well, we're able to kind of show multiple sides of the fintech industry, the innovator side, the kind of back end side, and sort of the best practices for those who are looking to adopt those innovations. Because obviously, it's more than just having a good idea. It's being able to take that idea and do something with it to bring it to fruition in a way that's ultimately successful. So we're trying to show more and more of that. And one of the things that's really helped us is that there's been more success stories to highlight. So we're trying to highlight that up on stage as best we can. And it's been fascinating to watch as we've grown, the type of response we've gotten and the way our audience has shifted.
So can you share any of those success stories that have come out of for either for the company or for the partnerships that have taken place because of Finovate?
You know, it's really difficult to pick just one because there's so many to choose from. You know, you talked about Personal Capital before the break. You talked about Betterment before the break. Those are both Finovate alums who've obviously gone on to do some really impressive things. You know, more recently, we've seen companies like Bond.ai, who won Best of Show last year and has gone on to really get a lot of strong traction there. Neener Analytics, a company who won Best of Show back-to-back Finovate Springs, has also gone on to do some really great things. So, you know, there's honestly too many to choose from for companies that have been on our stage and have done amazing things first. You know, one of the ones that I think is kind of overlooked was back a couple of years ago, we had Loop, which was a precursor to what eventually became Samsung Pay, which is something that is obviously made a massive difference in the space. So, you know, there's no shortage of those kind of stories. And regrettably, I can't even remember all of them, which I think is probably something that speaks to how many there are.
Hey, I have an idea. You should start a podcast where you talk to Finovate alums and kind of follow them, and then it'll be, you know, caught up on the internet forever and very searchable as well.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, we should probably get started on that round about 4 months ago and then launch it today. I think that'd be a great plan.
Fantastic idea. So when you, if people are planning on attending, what's the number one reason you would give people on why you should come to Finovate?
Well, I mean, simply put, it's just the most efficient way to see a massive number of fintech innovations. If you want to get a state of the industry, where it's at right now, where it's going in the next couple of years, Finovate's a great way to come and do that. You can get that download right away. That rapid fire demo format will allow you to see it. At Finovate Fall, we're going to have more than 70 demos on stage. And there's just no other way that you can realistically see that many companies in such a short amount of time. And I think that's the most important reason to attend, really, just to be aware of what's going on. And then, of course, to be able to network and talk to the people who are building that future, who are creating what will become the future of financial services. So you can see a company on stage. If they pique your curiosity, you can go talk to them at the booth. And inside, you know, a month from seeing them, you can have very detailed discussions and get pretty far along. You know, we've had a lot of business partnerships, funding rounds, customer acquisitions, and things like that that have taken place very shortly after Finovate. And it's always great for us to see that because, again, speaks to the value of being able to come see it so quickly and talk right there to the senior level executives who are creating it.
Well, and you hit on one of the things, you know, that I'm very fond of talking about is the fintech petting zoo, right? The idea that you show up, go pat the cute little innovators on the head, you walk back to the bank and say, boy, don't we feel innovative now? How should attendees, and especially, you know, the banks that are attending for the first time, any suggestions how they avoid the fintech petting zoo phenomenon?
I think the short answer is just don't hide, right? I think there's a lot of people who come and want to stay in the back of the room and sort of see what's out there, and then they'll leave without really engaging with any of those companies. And I think, you know, the more conversations you have on site, the more you actually talk to the innovators behind them, the more likely you are to find something real that you can take back to your office, that next process or that next big idea. So, you know, there's always that temptation, and I think fintech kind of pulls people in who are maybe a little bit more shy, people who are a little bit more reserved on a personal level, and so they don't necessarily feel comfortable starting conversations, and you want to just sort of see what's out there, which, you know, as you heard JP Nichols say on our stage, it's fine if that's your first show or even your second show, but once you've been to a couple different Finovates, you want to start engaging more and really talking to the folks who are there, because the innovators are all very intelligent people, and even if they're not offering exactly what you're looking for, having a conversation with them is a great way to get something built that you might need, or take an existing product and have it more tailored to something that you're doing. So the more you can engage, the more you can talk to other people and really become a part of the fabric, the better off you're going to be.
You know, one of the other suggestions that it comes out of a conversation with a bank at Finovate Fall, I think it was 2 years ago, you know, the banker said, you know, finding customer insights is really hard. So it's a lot easier to go shopping for solutions and hope you solve somebody's problem along the way. And so I do think it's important for anyone who's thinking about attending is actually start with your customer's need versus the shiny object aspect. You know, one of JP's other kind of things to talk about that he brings up frequently is it's a lot like going to the grocery store when you're hungry. You go right. And you're like, I'll take two AIs, a blockchain, and an omni-channel. Solutions.
No, I mean, I think that's spot on, right? That's really true. You know, you want to come in there with some sort of idea of what it is that you're looking for, what kind of problem you're dealing with. The other piece too, that keeping that open mind and seeing what's out there, you never know what's going to be surprising. But the other piece that I would say is, a lot of innovators kind of recognize this now, and they're doing a better job, I think, of validating the use cases and the reasons why companies need to engage them. They're sort of less, here's this cool technology, what can we do with it? And more, we know this is a problem and we're trying to drive directly at it and tackle that problem, which I think makes for, again, it's part of that more mature Finovate and FinTech market space, being able to have that data done, some of those problems already in the back of the innovators' minds as they're building their products, which then makes it a little bit easier as they go and talk to bankers to find something that resonates.
Well, you know, it's one of those other one of my favorite phrases, being the farm boy that I am, is you can't just put the digital lipstick on the pig. And part of what I've seen evolve out of Finovate is no longer do you just see the innovator coming in saying, but we're digital, right? Digital is not the answer to everything. They're actually coming with, you know, real customer insight. You know, and for those who are interested more on that, actually, BAI, if you go to BAI.org, starting the 23rd of September, they have an expert series on digital transformation that would actually be a great thing for everyone to preview that content at BAI.org on their deep dive on digital transformation, and then go to Finovate with that in mind. So last question on this front. You interviewed Jim Breeny, who is the founder of Finovate, your first of many podcasts. We're excited to have you as part of the Provoke family. What did you learn or surprise you either out of the podcasting experience or having that conversation with Jim?
Well, I think the first thing that I learned was that Jim has a podcast voice, which I've never heard before. All of a sudden, when I started pushing record and listened to the way his voice changed, it was like talking to a different person, which was really satisfying and really fun for me, having known him for so long. But I think one of the other pieces too, you know, kind of coming back to where we started this conversation, you know, around Finovate being created with a 7-minute time frame and really trying to get people to speak more quickly and get to the point faster and potentially, you know, enabling what is maybe a negative human trait, this desire for a shorter attention span. But with a podcast, we really wanted to try and follow that same model. We want to push people to have those conversations and kind of get to something cool, something real very quickly to keep it efficient, you know, to keep the episodes short and sort of feed. I mean, I know I have that need for a lot of content in a very short time frame. And so that's really what we're trying to do. And in talking with Jim and getting some of his insight on where that 7 minutes came from, kind of how it started, I thought was really interesting. You know, it's something that we don't think about a lot, but that was a conscious decision on his part back in 2007 when he was starting the show. Getting some of that background, I thought was really interesting. And it's fun for me to hear that as we are starting a new form of media around Finovate with that same basic idea.
Yeah, that's great how it all comes full circle. Now, was Jim the one who picked the original gong noise as well?
No, that was me. And that was actually just Googling around. I actually spent a day, if you can believe it, because this is what we do in the event space. I spent a day listening to different bell sounds and finally picked one that I liked. I think it's technically a boxing bell, but no, that was all my handiwork.
Oh, man. How big of a set did you start with in terms of the gongs? Did you have an idea of the gong sound you wanted going into it? What emotions did you want to evoke from your gong?
I wanted something that would hit hard and kind of linger, you know? So I was really choosy, to be honest. I like to take my time with those types of decisions. You know, those details matter, right? But I probably listened to in the neighborhood of 40 or 50 different bell sounds from a variety of sources before settling on that one. So, you know, looking back, is that how I would spend that time now? Maybe I do something differently, but I'm not sorry with how it shook out.
No, I mean, it's become a great hallmark and a piece of kind of the audio branding for Finovate. And so, you know, as we come to a close here, excited to have Greg Palmer and Finovate, the podcast, as part of the Provoke family. You're going to be able to find them at provoke.fm. You're also going to find them on all of the major platforms, whether you listen from iTunes or Stitcher or on Google Play. You're going to be able to find Finovate. Just look for it, Finovate. We're also going to be having Greg on as a regular co-host now as well, where we'll, you know, give you some of the great snippets here as well, where you can learn more about who he's been doing. Now, don't forget, you also want to be reading Life Scale by Brian that we talked about at the beginning of the show. You can find that at lifescaling.com or Brian Solis, BrianSolis.com. And last, if you want to skip through 300 pages of what the CFPB put out, now, if anyone wonders why there's any regulatory confusion, it's probably because it took 300 pages to do the clarification. skip and go to fintex.org to read Dara's paper. And Greg, is there a shorter way to get the discount code versus that, you know, test of my ability to remember the phonetic alphabet?
Yes. I mean, I'm sure everybody's already got it memorized based on how you sounded it out. But no, Finovate Podcast is a discount code that you can use as well. Simply enter that and you'll get 20% off. That's good for all of our upcoming shows. Again, Finovate Podcast, a little bit easier to remember.
Yes, and that's Finovate with one N. That's the key out of that. And so without further ado, here for the very first time, Greg's debut podcast with Jim Breeny, the founder of Finovate. And so, Greg, thanks for being part of the show and being part of the Provoke family.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the official Finovate podcast with Greg Palmer. In 2007, Finovate set out to create a dynamic fintech showcase featuring live 7-minute demos. For more than a decade, our global event series has brought together tens of thousands of people from across the fintech spectrum to see cutting-edge technologies. Now you can find out what goes on behind the scenes as key influencers and innovators share the stories they don't get to tell you from stage. Here's a glimpse of what we have in store for you this episode.
I still think that we as in the banking financial industry, put too much of the work onto the customer to figure things out. We deliver it via a statement or we put it online and we say, okay, here's your data, you know, have at it.
And now your host, Greg Palmer.
Welcome to the first episode of the Finovate podcast. I'm your host, Greg Palmer. We're going to get this podcast started by talking to the man who got Finovate started. I'm talking, of course, about Finovate's founder, Jim Breeny. The Finovate podcast is set up to mirror our events, where we give each company just 7 minutes on stage to show their latest innovations. Similarly, the guests who appear on this podcast will have just 7 minutes to chat with me to get their ideas across. In this first episode, we're going to talk to Jim about how that 7-minute time frame came about, and we'll also talk about how he's seen the industry unfold since the first Finovate event back in 2007. Let's dive right into the interview. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Greg. I'm so excited to be here. I love podcasts, and I've been looking forward to the Finovate one.
Excellent. No, I know you're a big podcast listener. Well, this one, as you know, is based on the 7-minute format for Finovate, which we'll talk about here. So we're going to start the clock. As of right now, you are on the clock. And let's go ahead and jump into our first question. So obviously, you know, Finovate has gained some traction through being very unique in the way we structure the event. Can you tell us a little bit about the motivation for forcing companies to do live demos in such a short time frame?
Well, it goes back to my experience. I love conferences and going to the big event. It was retail delivery back in the day. And there was all these speakers, and that was back in the time where the standard speaker slot was, say, 45 minutes, maybe an hour sometimes. And I was a product person, and I always wanted to hear what they were doing, what there actually was happening with their product lines. And you just didn't get that, or it was somewhere buried in that time frame. And so I would go out on the floor and try to find these companies of the 400 or 500 out there, and it was really hard. So the idea from Finovate was to get the product details front and center on stage, and then make it concise, and then let people talk to the people that were given the speeches, doing the demos right after the presentations. So it was a little bit of show and tell, and then fast networking with the people up that were doing it.
Yeah, well, I think most of us, when we see a new idea presented, we kind of know very quickly if it's something that we want to learn more about. And if we don't, if we're not interested in learning more about it, then you're right. Sitting through another 40 minutes can be just a nightmare, right? It's an age-old question. Do I get up and leave? Is it that bad? Right. Or do I sit here and tough it out and try and, you know, look like I'm paying attention while doing something else? I think from my standpoint, you know, the 7-minute format has also been really good for helping companies refine their messages. You know, we talked to a lot of the companies ahead of time before they get up on stage and do coaching calls with them. And it is a struggle for a lot of companies to figure out how they want to talk about themselves, how they want to represent themselves. And by putting them in such a short time frame, we kind of force them to refine their message down into a couple of sound bites, which then I think makes it much more easier for audience members to get engaged. So tell us about the no PowerPoint rule, because that's another one that's been a little bit interesting.
Well, when we got started in 2007, we really wanted to get it wanted to be concise so that you could see more people every hour or more people in a day. So I think the biggest part of it, at that point, we were thinking, oh, let's make it just 7 minutes and let's demo, let's get to the product, let's do this fast. I don't think the first time we said we had an absolute no PowerPoint rule, but during that first show, we had 20 demos, and one of them, everybody else did demos that was very product oriented, but one person got up there, did the PowerPoint thing, and just was horrible. It was just an excruciating 7 minutes of pain to watch, and it so didn't fit the format at all. And after that, we immediately did, well, let's just call this no PowerPoint and make it easy for everybody.
Wow. So one demo, or one, I guess, lack of demo that really wrecked it for everybody following on. That's we won't name any names. But it's true that it's for a reason. A lot of people use PowerPoint as a crutch. And I think in a lot of cases, it really takes the life out of a presentation, particularly when you've got something cool to show. And then, of course, there's the other side of it where, you know, it's easy to build a PowerPoint presentation saying, this is what my company is going to do. It's a lot harder to actually build that company and build the technology that works. And so there's that sink or swim mentality as well at Finovate, where you sort of say, well, if it doesn't work now, when you're up on stage in front of 1,000+ people, are you sure it's going to work for my company? Which I also think is a part of the audience favorite as well.
Yeah, it turned out to be very entertaining for the audience to go through that. You know, I always felt sorry for the speakers, having been one of those, but the audience definitely likes that.
Well, now that you're on the other side of it, you're on the clock here, 7 minutes. How do you still like it? Is it still the right format for you? You were at 4 minutes, by the way.
I know, it's going so fast. We've only talked about one question, I think.
I know, it's tough. Okay, here we go. Let's go to the next one. So, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about Finovate is that it's put me in a position, and you've been in this position as well, where you can watch the industry from a neutral vantage point. You don't have to really pay attention to, or you don't have too much invested in who wins and who loses. As a fan of fintech, somebody who gets that neutral viewpoint, what has been the big shift that have really excited you over the past decade?
Well, again, as being a product person, it is seeing the proliferation of products that addresses all these needs. There are all the needs that haven't changed. I mean, people's basic financial security and need to track things and all that is the same as it probably always has been. But the tools and the solutions and the things that are turnkey now just make it so much easier to build stuff and deliver new things to the customer. So it's, from a product person, it is just so much more interesting nowadays.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's obviously your background, your vantage point will play a big role there. What are you still kind of waiting to see? Where's the piece that you're like, why haven't we done this yet?
Well, that's a great question and something I've thought about for 2 decades now. And I feel like I would have answered this question fairly similar over the last 2 decades. Is I still think that we as in the banking financial industry, put too much of the work onto the customer to figure things out. We deliver it via a statement or we put it online and we say, okay, here's your data, you know, have at it. And instead, I'm still looking to see if for the banks to say, do it. Here's a problem I see, and you should be aware of it. So more management by exception than just forcing the customer to figure everything out.
Sure. I think from my standpoint, it kind of comes down to that sort of common sense anticipation, right? This is what customers are going to go through. What can we do to make it easier? Coming back to your point there, you know, instead of just dumping something onto them and saying, here, complete this process, complete this form. Giving them more and really anticipating what they want. And there's been a couple of companies who've done that really well, but there's certainly room for a lot more of it, no question about it.
Yeah, it's a lot better now than it was. Way, way better. And having the mobile phone, tethered to your financial institution really helps.
So here's a question that I've been dying to ask. I've got you on the record now. You've come to a lot of Finovate events. We're going to end the podcast on this question. What is your favorite joke that I've told from the Finovate stage? This is a really tough one because there's so many amazing ones to choose from.
It is.
You're on the record now. What are you going to answer?
Well, you remember that there was an evolution of humor. We started off pretty unhumorous until you got involved on stage and you really brought that, which I appreciate now especially. but I think the thing that stands out the most for me is the dolphin on the Thames thing. It wasn't exactly a joke that you had set up, but I think that was the biggest piece of humor that ever happened at a Finovate. And you can probably explain better.
I will actually, we're going to go into overtime. That's 7 minutes, but I feel obligated to defend myself now as I did then. There literally was a dolphin in the Thames. This is like a big deal at Finovate Europe back in probably 2014 or 2015. And during break, I was out there and I saw a dolphin. I came back and announced it from stage and nobody believed me. Twitter started going nuts. This crazy American thinks there's a dolphin in the river. And then the next day it was on the front page of the newspaper. The local government was really excited by it. They said the river's clean enough that dolphins can actually swim into it now. So I did not anticipate that little throwaway comment would snowball in the way that it did. But there were dolphins there. That did happen. So
I know. It's memorable. It still makes me laugh. I still tell that story as my favorite moment of humor.
Yeah, I'm still not sure how many people actually believe me on it. But, I guess probably you just have many. To let it go. Probably not many. I'm going to find that news article. I'm going to go back and look in the library. Do they still have microfiche?
I think I can. Put it in your, probably. Put it in your show notes.
Yeah, put it in my show notes. Well, we missed the 7-minute timeline, but we're going to end with the standard. We're only on episode 1, and we already had to go into a little bit of overtime. But to be fair, my honor probably won't be impugned on every show. We'll be releasing new episodes frequently, so subscribe now to be kept up to date on future shows. If you're interested in getting involved in one of our Finovate events, check out finovate.com. You can also claim a 20% discount on tickets to future shows by using the code FINOVATEPODCAST. Our next few shows will be Finovate Fall in New York on September 23rd and through 25th, Finovate Asia in Singapore, October 14th through 15th, Finovate Middle East in Dubai, November 20th and 21st, and Finovate Europe, which is moving to Berlin this year and will be on February 11th through the 13th. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us on the Finovate podcast this week. Brought to you by the team behind Finovate and produced in association with Provoke Media. Make sure you tell your friends about the show, leave us a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to our show, and check out our upcoming events at finovate.com.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.